gone. But at that moment, he didn't care. Jacob grabbed him and pulled him back as Jason surged to his feet, swinging wildly. "I'll kill you for that, you little—" Charles was between them in an instant. Jason thrashed in his grasp, but the guildmaster's bulk was more than enough to restrain him. "That's enough, Jason," he barked. "You're not killing anyone." "You saw what he did," Jason cried as blood streamed from his nose. "And I heard what you said," Charles shouted back. "I was tempted to hit you myself."
"How am I supposed to sing tonight?"
Jason demanded. His nose had already begun to swell, and his words became less understandable with every moment. Charles scowled. "I'll get someone to perform in your stead," he said. "The guild will cover the loss." "David?" The clerk stuck his head in the door. "Escort Master Jason to an herb gatherer and have the bill sent here." David nodded, moving to assist Jason. The master shoved him away.
"It isn't over," he promised Roger as he left.
Charles blew out a long breath as the door closed.
"Well, boy, you've gone and done it now. That's an enemy I wouldn't wish on anyone."
"He was already my enemy," Roger said. "You heard what he said." Charles nodded.
"I did," he said. "But you still should have restrained yourself. What will you do if a patron insults you next? Or the Duke himself? Guildsmen can't go around punching anyone that angers them."
Roger hung his head.
"I understand," he said.
"You've just cost me a fair bit of coin, though," Charles said. "I'll be throwing money and prime performances at Jason for weeks to keep him appeased, and with that fiddling of yours, I'd be a fool not to make you earn it back."
Roger looked up hopefully.
"Probationary license," Charles said, taking a sheet of paper and a quill. "You're only to perform under the supervision of a master of the guild. Paid from your take, and half of your gross earnings will come to this office until I consider your debt closed. Understood?"
"Absolutely, sir,"
Roger said eagerly.
"And you'll hold your temper," Charles warned, "or I'll tear up this license and you'll never perform in Angiers again."
Roger worked his fiddle, but out of the corner of his eye he was watching Abram, Jason's burly apprentice. Jason usually had one of his apprentices watching Roger's performances. It made him uneasy, knowing that they were watching him for their master, who meant him only ill. But it had been months since the incident in the guildmaster's office, and nothing had ever seemed to come of it. Master Jason had recovered quickly, and was soon performing again, raking in accolades at every high society event in Angiers. Roger might have dared to hope the episode was behind them, save that the apprentices came back almost every day. Sometimes it was Abram the wood demon lurking in a crowd, and others it was Sally the rock demon sipping a drink at the back of a tavern. But however innocuous they might seem, it was no coincidence. Roger ended his performance with a flourish, whipping the bow from his fiddle into the air. He took his time to bow, straightening just in time to catch it. The crowd burst into applause, and Roger's sharp ears caught the clink of metal coins in the hat as Jacob moved about the crowd with it. Roger couldn't suppress a smile. The old man looked almost spry. He scanned the dispersing crowd as they collected their equipment, but Abram had vanished. Still, they packed up quickly and took a roundabout path to their inn to make sure that they couldn't easily be followed. The sun was soon to set, and the streets were emptying rapidly. Winter was on the wane, but the boardwalks still held patches of ice and snow, and few stayed out unless they had business to.
"Even without Charles' cut, the rent is paid with days to spare," Jacob said, jingling the purse with their take. "When the debt's paid, you'll be rich."
"We'll be rich," Roger corrected, and Jacob laughed, kicking his heels and slapping Roger on the back. "Look at you," Roger said, shaking his head.
What happened to the shuffling and half-blind old man that opened his door to me a few months gone?
It's performing again that's done it, Jacob said, giving Roger a toothless grin. I know I'm not singing or throwing knives, but even passing the hat has gotten my dusty blood pumping like it hasn't in 20 years. I feel I could even...
He looked away. What? Roger asked.
Just, Jacob said, I don't know, spin a tale, perhaps. Or play dim while you throw punchlines my way. Nothing to steal your shine.
Of course, Roger said. I would have asked, but I felt I was imposing too much already, dragging you all over town to supervise my performances.
Boy, Jacob said, I can't remember the last time I've been so happy.
They were grinning as they turned a corner and walked right into Abram and Sally. Behind them, Jason smiled broadly.
It's good to see you, my friend, Jason said as Abram clapped Roger's shoulder.
The wind suddenly exploded from Roger's stomach, the punch doubling him over and knocking him to the frozen boardwalk. Before he could rise, Sally delivered a heavy kick to his jaw.
"Leave him alone!" Jacob cried, throwing himself at Sally.
The heavy soprano only laughed, grabbing him and swinging him hard against the wall of a building.
"Oh, there's plenty for you too, old man," Jason said as Sally landed heavy blows to his body.
Roger could hear the crunch of brittle bone and the weak, wet gasps that escaped the master's lips. Only the wall held him upright. The wooden planks beneath his hands were spinning, but Roger wrenched himself to his feet, holding his fiddle by the neck with both hands, swinging the makeshift club wildly.
"You won't get away with this," he cried.
Jason laughed.
"Who will you go to?" he asked.
"Will the city magistrates take the obviously false accusations of a petty street performer over the word of the First Minister's nephew?
Go to the guard, and it's you they'll hang."
Abram caught the fiddle easily, twisting Roger's arm hard as he drove a knee into his crotch. Roger felt his arm break even as his groin caught fire, and the fiddle came down hard on the back of his head, shattering as it hammered him to the boardwalk again. Even through the ringing in his ears, Roger heard Jacob's continued grunts of pain. Abram stood over him, smiling, as he lifted a heavy club. Chapter 26 Hospit 3:32 AR
"Ay, Giselle!" Scott cried as the old herb-gatherer came to him with her bowl. "Why not let your apprentice take the task for once?"
He nodded at Leisha, changing another man's dressing.
"Ha!" Giselle barked.
She was a heavy-set woman with short gray hair and a voice that carried.
"If I let her give the rag baths, I'd have half of Angiers crying plague within a week."
Leisha shook her head as the others in the room laughed, but she was smiling as she did. Scott was harmless. He was a messenger whose horse had thrown him on the road. Lucky to be alive, especially with two broken arms, he had somehow managed to track down his horse and get back in the saddle. He had no wife to care for him, and so the Messengers Guild had produced the clats to put him up in Giselle's hospit until he could do for himself. Giselle soaked her rag in the warm, soapy bowl and lifted the man's sheet, her hand moving with firm efficiency. The messenger gave a yelp as she was finishing up, and Giselle laughed.
"Just as well I give the baths," she said loudly, glancing down. "We wouldn't want to disappoint poor Leisha."
The others in their beds all had a laugh at the man's expense. It was a full room, and all were a little bed-bored.
"I think she'd likely find it in different form than you," Scott grumbled, blushing furiously, but Giselle only laughed again.
"Poor Scott has a shine on you,"
Giselle told Alicia later when they were in the pharmacy grinding herbs. A shine, laughed Katie, one of the younger apprentices. He's not shining. He's in love. The other apprentices in earshot burst into giggles.
I think he's cute, Ronnie volunteered.
You think everyone is cute, Alicia said.
Ronnie was just flowering and boy-crazed. But I hope you have better taste than to fall for a man that begs you for a rag bath.
Don't give her ideas, Giselle said. Ronnie had her way, she'd be rag-bathing every man in the hospital.
The girls all giggled, and even Ronnie didn't disagree.
At least have the decency to blush, Alicia told her, and the girls tittered again.
Enough, off with you giggle boxes, Giselle laughed. I want a word with Alicia.
Most every man that comes in here shines on you, Giselle said when they were gone. It wouldn't kill you to talk to one apart from asking after his health.
You sound like my mum, Alicia said.
Giselle slammed her pestle down on the counter.
I sound like no such thing, she said, having heard all about Ilona over the years. I just don't want you to die an old maid despite her. There's no crime in liking men.
I like men, Alicia protested.
Not that I've seen, Giselle said. So I should have jumped to offer Scott a rag bath, Alicia asked.
Certainly not, Giselle said. At least not in front of everyone, she added with a wink.
Now you sound like Bruna, Alicia groaned. It'll take more than crude comments to win my heart.
Requests like Scott's were nothing new to Alicia. She had her mother's body, and that meant a great deal of male attention, whether she invited it or not.
And what does it take? Giselle asked. What man could pass your heart wards?
A man I can trust, Alicia said. One I can kiss on the cheek without him bragging to his friends the next day that he stuck me behind the barn.
Giselle snorted. You'll sooner find a friendly calling, she said. Alicia shrugged.
I think you're scared, Giselle accused.
You've waited so long to lose your flower that you've taken a simple, natural thing every girl does and built it up into some unscalable wall.
That's ridiculous, Alicia said.
Is it? Giselle asked. I've seen you when ladies come asking your advice on bed matters, grasping and guessing as you blush furiously. How can you advise others about their bodies when you don't even know your own?
I'm quite sure I know what goes where, Alicia said wryly.
You know what I mean, Giselle said.
Well, what do you suggest I do about it? Alicia demanded.
Pick some man at random just to get it over with?
If that's what it takes, Giselle said.
Alicia glared at her, but Giselle met the gaze and didn't flinch.
You've guarded that flower so long that no man will ever be worthy to take it in your eyes, she said. What good is a flower hidden away for no one to see? Who will remember its beauty when it wilts?
Alicia let out a choked sob, and Giselle was there in an instant, holding her tightly as she cried. There, there, poppet, she soothed, stroking Leisha's hair. It's not as bad as all that. After supper, when the wards were checked and the apprentices sent to their studies, Leisha and Giselle finally had time to brew a pot of herb tea and open the satchel from the morning messenger. A lamp sat on the table, full and trimmed for long use. Patience all day and letters all night, Giselle sighed. Thank light, herb gatherers don't need sleep, eh? She upended the bag, spilling parchment all over the table. They quickly separated out correspondence meant for the patients, and then Giselle grabbed a bundle at random, glancing at the hail. These are yours, she said, passing the bundle to Alicia, and snatching another letter off the pile, which she opened and began to read. This one's from Kimber, she said after a moment. Kimber was another of Giselle's apprentices sent abroad, this one to Farmer's Stump, a day's ride south. The cooper's rash has gotten worse and spread again.
"'She's brewing the tea wrong, I just know it,' Leisha groaned. "'She never lets it steep long enough, and then wonders at her weak cures. "'If I have to go to Farmer Stump and brew it for her, I'll give her such a thumping.'
"'She knows it,' Giselle laughed. "'That's why she wrote to me this time.'
"'The laughter was infectious, and Leisha soon joined in. "'Leisha loved Giselle.' She could be as hard as Bruna when the occasion demanded, but she was always quick to laugh. Leisha missed Bruna dearly, and the thought turned her back to the bundle. It was fourth day when the weekly messenger arrived from Farmer's Stump, Cutter's Hollow, and Point South. Sure enough, the hail of the first letter in the stack was in her father's neat script. There was a letter from Vika as well, and Leisha read that one first. Her hands clenching as always until she was assured that Bruna, older than ancient, was still well. Vika's given birth, she noted. A boy, Jame, 6 pounds, 11 ounces.
Is that the third? Giselle asked.
Fourth, Leisha said. Vika had married child Jonah, tender Jonah now, not long after arriving in Cutter's Hollow, and wasted no time in bearing him children.
"'Not much chance of her coming back to Angiers, then,' Giselle lamented.
Leisha laughed. "'I thought that was given after the first,' she said. It was hard to believe 7 years had passed since she and Vika exchanged places. The temporary arrangement was proving permanent, which didn't entirely displease Leisha. Regardless of what Leisha did, Vika would stay in Cutter's Hollow, and seemed better liked there than Bruna, Leisha, and Darcy combined. The thought gave Leisha a sense of freedom she never dreamt existed. She'd promised to return one day to ensure the Hollow had the gatherer it needed, but the Creator had seen to that for her. Her future was hers to choose. Her father wrote that he had caught a chill, but Vika was tending him, and he expected to recover quickly. The next letter was from Mary. Her eldest daughter already flowered and promised. Mary would likely be a grandmother soon. Leisha sighed. There were two more letters in the bundle. Leisha corresponded with Mary, Vika, and her father almost every week, but her mother wrote less often, and oftentimes in a fit of pique. "All well?" Giselle asked, glancing up from her own reading to see Leisha's scowl.
"'Just my mum,' Leisha said, reading. "'The tone changes with her humors, but the message stays the same. "'Come home and have children before you grow too old, "'and the Creator takes the chance from you.'
"'Giselle grunted and shook her head. "'Tucked in with Ilona's letter was another sheet, supposedly from Garrod, "'though the missive was in her mother's hand, for Garrod knew no letters.' But whatever pain she took to make it seem dictated, Leisha was sure at least half the words were her mother's alone, and most likely the other half as well. The content, as with her mother's letters, never changed. Garrod was well, Garrod missed her, Garrod was waiting for her, Garrod loved her.
"'My mother must think me very stupid,' Leisha said wryly, as she read, "'to believe Garrod would ever attempt a poem, much less one that didn't rhyme.'
Giselle laughed, but it died prematurely when she saw that Leisha hadn't joined her.
"'What if she's right?' Leisha asked suddenly.
"'Dark as it is to think Ilona right about anything, I do want children one day. "'And you don't need to be an herb-gatherer to know that my days to do it are fewer ahead than behind. "'You said yourself I've wasted my best years.'
"'That was hardly what I said,' Giselle replied.
"'It's true enough,' Leisha said sadly. "'I've never bothered to look for men. "'They always had a way of finding me whether I wanted it or not. "'I just always thought one day I'd be found by one that fit into my life, "'rather than expecting me to fit into his.'
"'We all dream that sometimes, dear,' Giselle said. "'And it's a nice enough fantasy once in a while when you're staring at the wall. "'But you can't hang your hopes on it.'
Leisha squeezed the letter in her hand, crumpling it a bit.
"'So you're thinking of going back and marrying this Garrod?' Giselle asked.
"Oh, Creator, no," Leisha cried. "Of course not."
Giselle grunted.
"Good. You've saved me the trouble of thumping you on the head."
"Much as my belly longs for a child," Leisha said, "I'll die a maid before I let Garrett give me one. Problem is, he'd have at any other man in the Hollow that tried."
"Easily solved," Giselle said. "Have children here."
"What?"
Leisha asked.
"Cutter's Hollow is in good hands with Vika," Giselle said. "I trained the girl myself. And her heart is there now, in any event."
She leaned in, putting a meaty hand atop Leisha's.
"Stay," she said. "Make Angiers your home, and take over the hospit when I retire."
Leisha's eyes widened. She opened her mouth, but no sound came out.
"You've taught me as much as I've taught you these years," Giselle went on. "There's no one else I trust to run my business, even if Vika returned tomorrow."
"I don't know what to say," Leisha managed.
"No rush to say anything," Giselle said, patting Leisha's hand. "I dare say I don't plan to retire any day soon.
Just think on it."
Leisha nodded. Giselle opened her arms, and she fell into them, embracing the older woman tightly. As they parted, a shout from outside made them jump.
"Help! Help!" someone cried.
They both glanced at the window. It was past dark. Opening one's shutters at night in Angiers was a crime punishable by whipping, but Leisha and Giselle gave it no thought as they threw open the bar, seeing a trio of city guardsmen running down the boardwalk, two of them each carrying another man.
"Aye, the hospit,"
the lead guard called, seeing the shutters open on the lamplit room.
"Open your doors! Succor! Succor and healing!"
As one, Leisha and Giselle bolted for the stairs, nearly tumbling down in their haste to get to the door. It was winter, and though the city's waters worked diligently to keep the ward net clear of snow, ice, and dead leaves, a few wind demons invariably found their way in each night, hunting homeless beggars and waiting for the occasional fool that dared defy curfew and the law. A wind demon could drop like a silent stone, and then spread its taloned wings in a sudden snap, eviscerating a victim before grasping the body in its rear claws and swooping away with it. They made it to the landing and threw open the door, watching as the men approached. The lintels were warded. They and their patients were safe enough even without the door.
"What's happening?"
Katie cried, sticking her head out over the balcony at the top of the stairs. Behind her, the other apprentices were pouring out of their room.
"Put your aprons back on and get down here," Leisha ordered, and the younger girls scrambled to obey.
The men were still a ways off, but running hard. Leisha's stomach clenched as she heard shrieks in the sky. There were wind demons about, drawn to the light and commotion. But the guards were closing the distance fast, and Leisha dared to hope that they would make it unscathed until one of the men slipped on a patch of ice and went down hard. He screamed, and the man he was carrying tumbled to the boardwalk. The guard, still with a man over his shoulder, shouted something to the other and put his head down, picking up speed. The unburdened man turned and rushed back to his fallen comrade. A sudden flap of leathery wings was the only warning before the head of the hapless guard flew free of his body, rolling across the boardwalk. Katie screamed. Before blood even began to spurt from the wound, the wind demon gave a shriek and launched skyward, hauling the dead man's body into the air. The laden guard passed the wards, hauling his charge to safety. Leisha looked back to the remaining man, struggling to rise, and her brow set.
"Leisha, no!" Giselle cried, grabbing at her.
But Leisha stepped nimbly aside and bolted out onto the boardwalk. She ran in sharp zigzag as the shrieks of wind demons rang out in the cold air above. One Corling attempted a dive attack anyway, and missed her completely, if only by a few inches. It tumbled into the boardwalk with a crash, but quickly righted itself, its thick hide unharmed by the impact. Leisha spun away, hurling a fistful of Bruna's blinding powder into its eyes. The creature roared in pain, and Leisha ran on.
"Save him, not me," the guard called as she drew near, pointing to the still form lying on the boardwalk.
The guard's ankle was at an odd angle, clearly broken. Leisha glanced at the other form, prone on the boardwalk. She couldn't carry them both.
"Not me," the guard called again as she drew close.
Leisha shook her head. "I've a better chance of getting you to safety," she said in a tone that brooked no debate. She got under his arm and heaved.
"Keep low," the guard gasped. "Windies are less apt to dive at things low to the ground."
She hunched as much as she could, staggering under the big man's weight, and knew they weren't going to make it at a shuffling pace, low or not.
"Now!" Giselle cried, and Leisha looked up to see Katie and the other apprentices run out onto the boardwalk, holding the edges of white sheets above their heads.
The fluttering cloth was almost everywhere, making it impossible for the wind demons to pick a target. Under this cover, Mistress Giselle and the first guard came rushing up to them. Giselle helped Leisha as the guard fetched the unconscious man. Fear gave them all strength, and they covered the remaining distance quickly, retreating into the hospit and barring the door.
"This one's dead," Giselle said, her voice cold. "I'd wager he's been gone over an hour."
"I almost sacrificed myself for a dead man," the guard with the broken ankle exclaimed.
Leisha ignored him, moving over to the other injured man. With his round, freckled face and slender form, he seemed more a boy than a man. He'd been badly beaten, but he was breathing, and his heart was strong. Leisha inspected him swiftly, cutting away his bright patchwork clothes as she probed for broken bones and searched for the sources of the blood that soaked his motley. "What happened?" Giselle asked the injured guard as she inspected the break in his ankle.
"We were heading in from last patrol," the guard said through gritted teeth. "Found these two, jongleurs by their look, lying on the walk. Must have been robbed after a show. They was both alive, but in a bad way. It was dark by then, but neither of them looked like they'd last the night without a gatherer to tend them. I remembered this hospit, and we ran hard as we could, trying to stay under eaves, out of sight from Windy's."
Giselle nodded.
"You did the right thing," she said. "Tell that to poor Johnson," the guard said. "Creator, what will I tell his wife?"
"That's a worry for the morrow," Giselle said, lifting a flask to the man's lips. "Drink this." The guard looked at her dubiously.
"What is it?"
he asked.
"It'll put you to sleep," Giselle said. "I need to set your ankle, and I promise you, you don't want to be awake when I do."
The guard quaffed the potion quickly. Leisha was cleaning out the younger one's wounds when he started awake with a gasp, sitting up. One of his eyes was swollen shut, but the other was a bright green and darted about wildly.
"Jacob!"
he cried. He thrashed wildly, and it took Leisha, Katie, and the last guard to wrestle him back down. He turned his one piercing eye on Leisha.
"Where's Jacob?" he asked. "Is he all right?"
"The older man who was found with you?" Leisha asked, and he nodded. Leisha hesitated, picking her words, but the pause was answer enough, and he screamed, thrashing again. The guard pinned him hard, looking him in the eyes.
"Did you see who did this to you?" he asked.
"He's in no condition," Leisha began, but the man cut her off with a glare.
"I lost a man tonight," he said. "I don't have time to wait."
He turned back to the boy.
"Well?" he asked.
The boy looked at him with eyes filling with tears. Finally, he shook his head, but the guard didn't let up.
"You must have seen something," he pressed.
"That's enough," Leisha said, grabbing the man's wrists and pulling hard. He resisted for a moment, and then let go. "Wait in the other room," she ordered. He scowled, but complied. The boy was weeping openly when Leisha turned back to him.
"Just put me back out into the night," he said, holding up a crippled hand. "I was meant to die a long time ago, and everyone that tries to save me ends up dead."
Leisha took the crippled hand in hers and looked him in the eye.
"I'll take my chances," she said, squeezing. "We survivors have to look out for one another."
She put the flask of sleeping draught to his lips and held his hand, lending him strength until his eyes slipped closed. The sound of fiddling filled the hospit. Patients clapped their hands and the apprentices danced as they went about their tasks. Even Leisha and Giselle had a spring in their step. "To think young Roger was worried he had no way to pay," Giselle said as they prepared lunch. "I've half a mind to pay him to come entertain the patients after he's back on his feet."
"The patients and the girls love him," Leisha agreed.
"I've seen you dancing when you think no one's looking," Giselle said. Leisha smiled. When he wasn't fiddling, Roger spun tales that had the apprentices clustered at the foot of his bed, or taught them makeup tricks he claimed came from the Duke's own courtesans. Giselle mothered him constantly, and the apprentices all shined and doted on him. "An extra thick slice of beef for him, then," Leisha said, cutting the meat and laying it on a platter already overladen with potatoes and fruit. Giselle shook her head. "I don't know where that boy puts it," she said. "You and the others have been stuffing him for a full moon and more, and he's still thin as a reed." "Lunch!" she bellowed, and the girls filtered in to collect the trays. Ronnie moved directly for the overladen one, but Leisha swept it out of reach.
"I'll take this one myself," she said, smiling at the looks of disappointment around the kitchen.
"Roger needs to take a break and eat something, not spin private tales while you girls cut his meat," Giselle said. "You can all fawn on him later." "Intermission," Leisha called as she swept into the room, but she needn't have bothered. The bow slipped from the fiddle strings with a squeak the moment she appeared. Roger smiled and waved, knocking over a wooden cup as he tried to set his fiddle aside. His broken fingers and arm had mended neatly, but his leg casts were still on strings, and he couldn't easily reach the bedstand.
"You must be hungry today," she laughed, setting the tray across his lap and taking the fiddle.
Roger looked at the tray dubiously, smiling up at her.
"I don't suppose you could help me cut," he asked, holding up his crippled hand.
Leisha raised her eyebrows at him.
"Your fingers seem nimble enough when you work your fiddle," she said. "Why are they deficient now?"
"Because I hate eating alone," Roger laughed. Leisha smiled, sitting on the side of the bed and taking the knife and fork. She cut a thick bite of meat, dragging it through the gravy and potatoes before bringing it up to Roger's mouth. He smiled at her, and a bit of gravy leaked from his mouth, making Leisha titter. Roger blushed, his fair cheeks turning as red as his hair.
"I can lift the fork myself," he said.
"You want me to just cut up the meat and leave?" Leisha asked, and Roger shook his head vigorously.
"Then hush," she said, lifting another forkful to his mouth.
"It's not my fiddle, you know," Roger said, glancing back to the instrument after a few moments of silence. "It's Jacob's. Mine was broken when..." Leisha frowned as he trailed off. After more than a month, he still refused to speak of the attack, even when pressed by the guard. He'd sent for his few possessions, but so far as she knew, he hadn't even contacted the Jongleurs Guild to tell them what had happened.
"It wasn't your fault," Leisha said, seeing his eyes go distant. "You didn't attack him."
"I might as well have," Roger said.
"What do you mean?" Leisha asked.
Roger looked away.
"I mean, by forcing him from retirement, he'd still be alive if..."
"You said he told you coming out of retirement was the best thing that had happened to him in 20 years, Leisha argued. "It sounds like he lived more in that short time than he would have in years spent in that cell in the guild house." Roger nodded, but his eyes grew wet. Leisha squeezed his hand.
"Herb gatherers see death often," she told him.
No one ever goes to the Creator with all their business complete. We all get a different length of time, but it needs to be enough, regardless."
"It just seems to come early for the people who cross my path," Roger sighed.
"I've seen it come early for a great many who've never heard of Roger Halfgrip," Leisha said. "Would you like to shoulder the blame for their deaths as well?" Roger looked at her, and she pressed another forkful into his mouth.
"It doesn't serve the dead to stop living yourself out of guilt," she said.
Misha had her hands full of linens when the messenger arrived. She slipped the letter from Vika into her apron and left the rest for later. She finished putting away the laundry, but then a girl ran up to tell her a patient had coughed blood. After that, she had to set a broken arm and give the apprentices their lesson. Before she knew it, the sun had set and the apprentices were all in bed. She turned the wicks down to a dim orange glow and made a last sweep through the rows of beds, making sure the patients were comfortable before she went upstairs for the night. She met Roger's eyes as she passed, and he beckoned, but she smiled and shook her head. She pointed to him, then put her hands together as if praying, leaned her cheek against them, and closed her eyes. Roger frowned, but she winked at him and kept on, knowing he wouldn't follow. His casts had come off, but Roger complained of pain and weakness, despite the clean mend. At the end of the room, she took the time to pour herself a cup of water. It was a warm spring night, and the pitcher was damp with condensation. She brushed her hand against her apron absently to dry it, and there was a crinkle of paper. She remembered Vika's letter and pulled it out, breaking the seal with her thumb and tilting the page toward the lamp as she drank. A moment later, she dropped her cup. She didn't notice or hear the ceramic shatter. She clutched the paper tightly and fled the room. Lisha was sobbing quietly in the darkened kitchen when Roger found her. "Are you all right?" he asked quietly, leaning heavily on his cane.
"Roger?" she sniffed.
"Why aren't you in bed?" Roger didn't answer, coming to sit beside her.
"Bad news from home?" he asked.
Lisha looked at him a moment, then nodded.
"That chill my father caught?"
she asked, waiting for Roger to nod his recollection before going on.
"He seemed to get better, but it came back with a vengeance. Turns out it was a flux that's run from one end of the hollow to the other. Most seem to be pulling through it, but the weaker ones..."
She began to weep again.
"Someone you know?"
Roger asked, cursing himself as he said it. Of course it was someone she knew. Everyone knew everyone in the hamlets. Lisha didn't notice the slip.
"My mentor, Bruna," she said,
fat teardrops falling onto her apron.
"A few others as well, and two children I never had the chance to meet. Over a dozen in all, and more than half the town still laid up. My father worst amongst them."
"I'm sorry," Roger said.
"Don't feel sorry for me. It's my fault," Lisha said.
"What?" Roger asked.
"I should have been there," Lisha said. "I haven't been Giselle's apprentice in years. I promised to return to Cutter's Hollow when my studies were done. If I had kept my promises, I would have been there, and perhaps..."
"I saw the flux kill some people in Wood's End once," Roger said. "Would you like to add those to your conscience? Or those that die in this very city because you can't tend them all?"
"That's not the same, and you know it," Lisha said.
"Isn't it?" Roger asked.
"You said yourself that it does nothing to serve the dead if you stop living yourself out of guilt."
Lisha looked at him, her eyes round and wet.
"So what do you want to do?" Roger asked. "Spend the night crying, or start packing?"
"Packing?" Lisha asked.
"I have a messenger's portable circle," Roger said. "We can leave for Cutter's Hollow in the morning."
"Roger, you can barely walk," Lisha said. Roger lifted his cane, set it on the counter, and stood. He walked a bit stiffly, but unaided.
"Then faking to keep your warm bed and doting women a bit longer?" Lisha asked.
"I never!"
Roger blushed. "I'm just not ready to perform yet."
"But you're fit to walk all the way to Cutter's Hollow?" Lisha asked.
"It would take a week without a horse."
"I'll doubt I'll need to do any backflips on the way," Roger said.
"I can do it."
Lisha crossed her arms and shook her head. No, I absolutely forbid it.
I'm not some apprentice you can forbid, Roger said.
You're my patient, Leisha shot back.
And I'll forbid anything that puts your healing in jeopardy. I'll hire a messenger to take me.
Good luck finding one, Roger said.
The weekly man south will have left today, and at this time of year most of the others will be booked. It'll cost a fortune to convince one to drop everything and take it at Cutter's Hollow. Besides, I can drive Callings away with my fiddle. No messenger can offer you that.
I'm sure you could, Leisha said, her tone making it clear she was sure of no such thing. But what I need is a swift messenger's horse, not a magic fiddle.
She ignored his protests, ushering him back to bed, and then went upstairs to pack her things.
So you're sure about this? Giselle asked the next morning.
I have to go, Leisha said. It's too much for Vika and Darcy to handle alone.
Giselle nodded.
Roger seems to think he's taking you, she said.
Well, he's not, Leisha said. I'm hiring a messenger.
He's been packing his things all morning, Giselle said.
He's barely healed, Leisha said.
Bah, Giselle said. It's near 3 moons. I haven't seen him use his cane all morning. I think it's been nothing more than a reason to be around you for some time.
Leisha's eyes bulged.
You think that Roger?
Giselle shrugged.
I'm just saying it isn't every day a man comes along who'll brave Callings for your sake.
Giselle, I'm old enough to be his mother, Leisha said.
Bah, Giselle scoffed. You're only 27, and Roger says he's 20.
Roger says a lot of things that aren't so, Leisha said.
Giselle shrugged again.
You say you're nothing like my mum, Leisha said, but you both find a way to turn every tragedy into a discussion about my love life.
Giselle opened her mouth to reply, but Leisha held up a hand to stay her.
If you'll excuse me, she said, I have a messenger to hire.
She left the kitchen in a fume, and Roger, listening at the door, barely managed to get out of her way and out of sight. Between her father's arrangements and her earnings from Giselle, Leisha was able to acquire a promissory note from the Duke's bank for 150 Milanese sons. It was a sum beyond the dreams of Angerian peasantry, but messengers didn't risk their lives for clats. She'd hoped it would be enough, but Roger's words proved prophetic, or a curse. Spring trade was on in full, and even the worst messengers had assignments. Scott was out of the city, and the secretary at the Messengers Guild had flat out refused to help her. The best they could offer was next week's man south, a full 6 days away.
I could walk there in that time, she shouted at the clerk.
Then I suggest you get started, the man said dryly. Leisha bit her tongue and stomped off.
She thought she would lose her mind if she had to wait a week to leave. If her father died in that week...
Leisha, a voice called. She stopped short, turning slowly.
It is you, Marek called, striding up to her with his arms outspread. I didn't realize you were still in the city.
Shocked, Leisha let him embrace her.
What are you doing in the guildhouse?
Marek asked, backing up to eye her appreciatively. He was still handsome with his wolf eyes.
I need an escort to take me back to Cutter's Hollow, she said. There's a flux sweeping the town and they need my help.
I could take you, I suppose, Marek said. I'll need to call a favor to cover my run to Riverbridge tomorrow, but that should be easy enough.
I have money, Leisha said.
You know I don't take money for escort work, Marek said, leering at her as he swept in close. There's only one payment that interests me.
His hand reached around to squeeze her buttock, and Leisha resisted the urge to pull away. She thought of the people that needed her, and more, she thought of what Giselle had said about flowers no one saw. Perhaps it was the Creator's plan that she should meet Marek this day. She swallowed hard and nodded at him. Marek swept Leisha into a shadowed alcove off the main hall. He pushed her against the wall behind a wooden statue and kissed her deeply.
After a moment, she returned the kiss, putting her arms around his shoulders, his tongue warm in her mouth.
"I won't have that problem this time," Merrick promised, taking her hand and placing it on his rigid manhood.
Leisha smiled timidly. "I could come to your inn before dark," she said. "We could spend the night and leave in the morning."
Merrick looked from side to side and shook his head. He pushed her against the wall again, reaching down with one hand to unbuckle his belt.
"I've waited for this too long," he grunted. "I'm ready now, and I'm not letting it get away."
"I'm not doing it in a hallway," Leisha hissed, pushing him back. "Someone will see."
"No one will see," Merrick said, pressing in and kissing her again.
He produced his stiff member and started pulling up her skirts.
"You're here, like magic," he said. "And this time so am I. What more could you want?"
"Privacy?" Leisha asked. "A bed? A pair of candles? Anything?"
"A jongleur singing outside the window," Merrick mocked, his fingers probing between her legs to find her opening.
"You sound like a virgin."
"I am a virgin," Leisha hissed.
Merrick pulled away, his erection still in his hand, and looked at her wryly.
"Everyone in Cutter's Hollow knows you stuck that ape Garrett a dozen times at least," he said. "Are you still lying about it after all this time?"
Leisha scowled and drove her knee hard into his crotch, storming out of the guildhouse while Merrick was still groaning on the ground.
"No one would take you?" Roger asked that night.
"No one I wouldn't have to bed in exchange," Leisha grunted, leaving out that she had indeed been willing to go that far.
Even now, she worried that she'd made a huge mistake. Part of her wished she had just let Merrick have his way. But even if Giselle was right and her maidenhood wasn't the most precious thing in all the world, it was surely worth more than that. She scrunched up her eyes too late, only serving to squeeze out the tears she sought to prevent.
Roger touched her face, and she looked at him. He smiled and reached out, producing a brightly colored handkerchief as if from her ear. She laughed in spite of herself and took the kerchief to dry her eyes.
"I could still take you," he said. "I walked all the way from here to Shepherd's Dale. If I can do that, I can get you to Cutter's Hollow."
"Truly?" Leisha asked, sniffling.
"That's not just one of your Jack Scaletongue stories, like being able to charm Corlings with your fiddle."
"Truly," Roger said.
"Why would you do that for me?" Leisha asked.
Roger smiled, taking her hand in his crippled one.
"We're survivors, aren't we?" he asked. "Someone once told me that survivors have to look out for one another."
Leisha sobbed and hugged him.
"Am I going mad?" Roger asked himself as they left the gates of Angiers behind.
Leisha had purchased a horse for the trip, but Roger had no riding experience, and Leisha little more.
He sat behind her as she guided the beast at a pace barely faster than they could walk.
Even then, the horse jarred his stiff legs painfully, but Roger didn't complain. If he said anything before they were out of sight of the city, Leisha would make them turn back.
"Which is what you should do anyway," he thought. "You're a jongleur, not a messenger."
But Leisha needed him, and he knew from the first time he saw her that he could never refuse her anything. He knew she saw him as a child, but that would change when he brought her home. She would see there was more to him, that he could take care of himself and her as well. And what was there for him in Angiers, anyway? Jacob was gone, and the guild likely thought he was dead as well, which is probably for the best. "If you go to the guard, it's you they'll hang," Jason had said. But Roger was smart enough to know that if Goldentone ever learned he was alive, he would never get the chance to tell tales. He looked at the road ahead, though, and his gut clenched. Like Cricket Run, Farmer's Stump was just a day away on horseback. But Cutter's Hollow was much farther, perhaps 4 nights, even with the horse. Roger had never spent more than 2 nights outside, and that just the once. Eric's death flashed in his mind. Could he handle losing Leisha, too?
"Are you all right?" Leisha asked.
What?
Roger replied. Your hands are shaking, Leisha said. He looked at his hands on her waist and saw that she was right. It's nothing, he managed. I just felt a chill out of nowhere. I hate that, Leisha said, but Roger barely heard. He stared at his hands, trying to will them to stillness. You're an actor, he scolded himself. Act brave! He thought of Marco Rover, the brave explorer in his stories. Roger had described the man and mummed his adventures so many times, every trait and mannerism was second nature to him. His back straightened, and his hands ceased to shake. Let me know when you get tired, he said, and I'll take over the reins. I thought you've never ridden before, Leisha said. You learn things by doing them, Roger said, quoting the line Marco Rover used whenever he encountered something new. Marco Rover was never afraid to do things he'd never done before. With Roger at the reins, they made better time, but even so, they barely made it to Farmer's Stump before dusk. They stabled the horse and made their way to the inn. You a jongleur? The innkeeper asked, taking in Roger's motley. Roger Halfgrip, Roger said, out of Angiers and points west. Never heard of you, the innkeeper grunted. But the room's free if you put on a show. Roger looked to Leisha, and when she shrugged and nodded, he smiled, pulling out his bag of marvels. Farmer's Stump was a small cluster of buildings and houses, all connected by warded boardwalks. Unlike any other village Roger had ever been to, the Stumpers went outside at night, walking freely, if hastily, from building to building. The freedom meant a full taproom, which pleased Roger well. He performed for the first time in months, but it felt natural, and he soon had the entire room clapping and laughing at tales of Jack Scaletongue and the warded man. When he returned to his seat, Leisha's face was a little flushed with wine. "You were wonderful," she said. "I knew you would be." Roger beamed and was about to say something when a pair of men came over bearing a handful of pitchers. They handed one to Roger and another to Leisha. "Just a thanks for the show," the lead man said. "I know it ain't much." "It's wonderful, thank you," Roger said. "Please join us." He gestured to the empty seats at their table. The two men sat. "What brings you through the stump?" the first man asked. He was short with a thick black beard. His companion was taller, burlier, and mute. "We're heading to Cutter's Hollow," Roger said. "Leisha is an herb-gatherer going to help them fight the flux." "The hollow's a long way," the man with the black beard said. "How will you last the nights?"
"Don't fear for us," Roger said. "We have a messenger's circle."
"Portable circle?" the man asked in surprise. "That must have cost a pretty pile."
Roger nodded.
"More than you know," he said.
"Well, we won't keep you from your beds," the man said, he and his companion rising from the table. "You'll want an early start."
They moved away, going to join a third man at another table, as Roger and Leisha finished their drinks and headed to their room. Chapter 27 Nightfall 3:32 AR
"Look at me, I'm a jongleur," said one of the men, plopping the belled motley cap on his head and prancing around the road. The black-bearded man barked a laugh, but their third companion, larger than both of them combined, said nothing. All were smiling. "I'd like to know what that witch threw at me," the black-bearded man said. "Dunked my whole head in the stream, and it still feels like my eyes are on fire." He held up the circle and the reins of the horse, grinning. "Still, an easy take like that only comes along once a life." "Be months before we need to work again," the man in the motley cap agreed, jingling the purse of coins. "And not a scratch on us." He jumped up and clicked his heels. "Maybe not a scratch on you," chuckled the black-bearded man. "But I've a few on my back. That arse was worth nearly as much as the circle, even if that dust you threw in my eyes made it so I could barely see what went where." The man in the motley cap laughed, and their giant, mute companion clapped his hands with a grin. "Should have taken her with us," the man in the motley cap said. It's cold in that miserable cave. Don't be stupid, the black-bearded man said. We got a horse in a messenger circle now. We don't need to stay in the cave no more, and that's best. Word in the stumps that the Duke's noticing them just leaving the town getting a hit. We go south first thing come morning, before we get Rhinebeck's guards on our heels.
The men were so busy with their discussion, they didn't notice the man riding down the road toward them until he was just a dozen yards away. In the waning light, he seemed wraith-like, wrapped in flowing robes and astride a dark horse, moving in the shadow of the trees beside the forest road. When they did take note of him, the mirth on their faces fell away, replaced with looks of challenge. The black-bearded man dropped the portable circle to the ground and pulled a heavy cudgel from the horse, advancing on the stranger. He was squat and thickly set, with thinning hair above his long, unkempt beard. Behind him, the mute raised a club the size of a small tree, and the man in the motley cap brandished a spear, the head nicked and burred. "This here's our road," the black-bearded man explained to the stranger. "We're fine to share, but there's a tax." In answer, the stranger stepped his horse from the shadows. A quiver of heavy arrows hung from his saddle, the bow strung and in easy reach. A spear as long as a lance rested in a harness on the other side, a rounded shield beside it. Strapped behind his seat, several shorter spears jutted, their points glittering wickedly in the setting sun. But the stranger reached for no weapon, merely letting his hood slip back a bit. The men's eyes widened, and their leader backed away, scooping up the portable circle.
"Might let you pass just the once," he amended, glancing back at the others. Even the giant had gone pale with fear.
They kept their weapons ready, but carefully edged around the giant horse and backed down the road.
"We'd best not see you on this road again," the black-bearded man called when they were a safe distance away.
The stranger rode on, unconcerned. Roger fought his terror as the voices receded. They had told him they would kill him if he tried to rise again. He reached into his secret pocket to take hold of his talisman, but all he found were some broken bits of wood and a clump of yellow-gray hair. It must have broken when the mute kicked him in the gut. He let the remnants fall from his numb fingers into the mud. The sound of Leisha's sobs cut into him, making him afraid to look up. He had made that mistake before, when the giant had gotten off his back to take his turn with Leisha. One of the others had quickly taken his place, using Roger's back as a bench to watch the fun. There was little intelligence in the giant's eyes, but if he lacked the sadism of his companions, his dumb lust was a terror in itself. The urges of an animal and the body of a rock demon. If Roger could have removed the image of him atop Leisha from his mind by clawing out his eyes, he wouldn't have hesitated. He'd been a fool, advertising their path and valuables like that. Too much time spent in the western hamlets had dulled his natural city-bred distrust of strangers. Marco Rover wouldn't have trusted them, he thought. But that wasn't entirely true. Marco was forever getting tricked or clubbed in the head and left for dead. He survived by keeping his wits afterward. He survives because it's a story, and you control the ending, Roger reminded himself. But the image of Marco Rover picking himself up and dusting himself off stuck with him. And eventually Roger gathered his strength and his nerve, forcing himself to his knees. Pain shot through him, but he didn't think they had broken any bones. His left eye was so swollen he could barely see out of it, and he tasted blood in his mouth from his thickened lip. He was covered in bruises, but Abram had done worse. But there were no guardsmen this time to haul him to safety. No mother or master to put themselves in a demon's path. Leisha whimpered again, and guilt shook him. He'd fought to save her honor, but they had been three, all armed and stronger than him. What could he have done? "I wish they'd killed me," he thought to himself, slumping. "Better dead than to have seen..."
coward," a voice in the back of his head snarled. "Get up, she needs you."
Roger staggered to his feet, looking around. Leisha was curled up in the dirt of the forest road, sobbing, without